And welcome back to Dad's on the Air, coming to you around Australia on the Community Radio Network. In this program, we bring you informing and entertaining conversations with a wide range of interesting people on topics of fatherhood, family and parenting, and men's and boys' issues. Hi, I'm Bill Cable, and our special guest today is Steve Bidoff, AM. Steve is one of the world's best love psychologists, and he has worked with families for over 40 years. He has changed the nature of boys' education and brought a generation of fathers into hands-on engagement with their kids and given mothers the confidence to love their sons and not be afraid of them. He has worked with schools in 17 countries and has 130,000 parents who have heard his unforgettable live talks. Steve, welcome to Dad's on the Air.
Talking to you.
I noticed your new book is called Raising Boys in the 21st Century. It has a subtitle, How to Help Our Boys Become Open-Hearted, Kind and Strong Men. And the original Raising Boys back in 1997 said why boys are different and how to help them become happy and well-balanced men. Is there a change in emphasis in those subtitles?
Yes, there is. And you've been very observant, Bill, to pick that up. I mean, it's quite incredible to me because most days when I wake up, I still feel like a teenager. And so the fact that it's 25 years since I first wrote Raising Boys, and a quarter of a century is a really long time. And I felt that we'd come a long way. In a way, it was time to now go further still. You have to take these things one step at a time. And back then, people were still arguing that if we raised children exactly the same, that might achieve that goal of equality and respect between the sexes. And so we were trying to sort of say, look, let's just not bother if your child is a boy or a girl. Just let's raise them the same. That was the thinking of the day. But I knew from my work that that wasn't working very well, and that we needed to understand the biology of boys made them have their own kind of risk factors. For instance, they're three times more likely to die before they're 25, and which is a huge difference with girls, and they do far worse at school. We wanted to get people to look at the differences and accept that they were real for most boys and girls. Now, today, people are aware of that, and the next step they'll realize is that, in fact, there's a continuum with the genders, and that some boys are very high testosterone boys, and some are much less. And so just knowing you've got a boy at home doesn't tell you anything about what he's going to be like. There's some generalizations, but you really have to have a look and see what you've got and work to balance that, because what we say is the world doesn't want men who can wrestle buffaloes anymore, Bill. It wants men who are good communicators. And so that line, open-hearted, I think what we most want now, because there's a lot of trouble still with men and boys, is that we want them to have good hearts. And so that became the focus of the new book, is that to raise a kind of man who was strong in himself and comfortable in his own skin, but achieve that without being mean or harsh, that he was able to express his feelings and be a caring and loving sort of man. That's a lot of answer. Does that make some sense if you're listening?
Yes, it does. And you point out there are these differences between boys and girls. You just mentioned a couple then. So that creates a need for a special book devoted to boys, I think.
Yes, it definitely does. And I think that's, you know, the book is in, I think it's 3 million homes now. And so that's definitely what parents feel. They wanted a specific answers for their sons. But just to, if I can illustrate that kind of difference, Bill, there was a study that was done taking this blood samples with boys, taking blood samples from the umbilical cord at birth, because that's something that's easy to do. No one minds too much if you take a bit of blood from the umbilical cord. It's just going to get probably thrown away and doesn't hurt to do that. And so they studied the umbilical cord blood of newborns. And one of the things they looked at was the levels of testosterone, which is the hormone that makes you more masculine as a little baby in the womb. And what they discovered was there was this wide variation, that there were high, what you could call high T boys and low T boys. And the high T boys were the ones who were very kind of physically active when they started to grow up. But a rather shocking thing is they were the ones that had trouble with reading and with words. And we know that boys have three times as much difficulty with learning to read as girls do. And it's always been a big problem in schools that boys don't always learn very well, some of them anyway. But it looks like it's these high T boys that are the ones that are at risk. They don't naturally take to, they take to action and movement, but they don't take to words and talking. And so what that meant as a mum or a dad is that if you've got a high T boy, now, boy, we don't suggest, you know, taking blood samples or anything, just if you've got a boy who's very rambunctious and very active, and be sure to make him feel good about that and give him lots of chances. Those are the ones that we really need to read stories to and do lots of reading and chatter to them a lot and help them to become more verbal, because otherwise when they go to school they won't really like books or reading very much. So we try to take the strengths, which is that those boys will be brave and they'll be active and good with spatial skills, things like that, and put in what they might not have, which is the ability to use words well. Whereas if you have a boy who's very gentle and kind, then he might be one who you need to teach him to stand up for himself and speak loud and stick his jaw out, you know, when he's sort of, if someone tries to push him around. So you're always trying to provide a balance given the child that you've got, because every child is different, and there'll be some girls who are very macho and as well. You have to always think of it as an overlapping phenomenon.
You mentioned testosterone then, and that's always pretty topical, but in your book, your new book, you discuss that there are some floods of testosterone that people hadn't previously been aware of, and I guess there's an effect of that.
Yes, it's now, hormones are very complicated, and so when people sort of say testosterone, it's not as simple as just there's this juice that makes you man up or anything. But one of the things that's been discovered is at the age of 4, there are some changes. It's like the very early stages of puberty begin to happen, and boys produce higher levels of a thing called luteinizing hormone at 4. And what that starts to do is it starts to grow some new cells in their testes, which are the Leydig cells, which will produce testosterone when they become a teenager. Now, we're only just beginning to understand how this all works, but one of the things we've always noticed with little boys is around about 4, they get more physically active. And so we call it the full-on 4. And so often when I meet parents around the world and talk to them, and they say, look, we really liked your book. And I say, well, can you tell me what it was in the book? Because I'm often not sure which parts people find helpful. And they say, look, was that business about them being really active at 4? They said, we thought that our boy was bad, or we thought he was naughty. And so, because we live in a world where you have to behave a lot. There's not as much running around in the bush and climbing trees and things as the kids once were able to do. And so they had decided, because their son didn't want to sit still at the table, you know, with a pen and paper or something, that he was bad or that they were doing a bad job. And so it's often a relief to parents to think, this is just very natural, whether it's a boy or a girl, if they want to move, you know, a border collie at your house, you damn well get out and take it for a walk every day. You just know to do that. But we'd sort of forgotten to do that with our children. Does that make sense, Bill?
Yeah, I think I can understand the parents would welcome your words of advice when they've probably got nowhere else to turn to and are pulling their hair out. So, yeah, I can understand that completely.
Yeah, it's just such a simple thing. And then at 8 years of age, and this was very exciting because it only came out a year ago, just in time when we were just about to finish getting the book together, that some researchers in Melbourne at the Menzies Research Institute in Melbourne and the Royal Children's Hospital working together, they discovered that there's an eight-year-old stage, which again is another of these mysterious hormone things, which is that it's called adrenarche. That's the name they gave it, adrenarche. And it's the beginnings of the next bit of puberty, which is adrenal hormones start to come out in the boys, and it's the equivalent to what happens with girls at about maybe 10 or 12, but it's different, and the effect though is rather the same, that it makes them more emotional, and so they become more likely to either fly off the handle or just burst into tears or get upset by things. And when we came across this, we put it on our Facebook community and said, look, this is what the researchers are saying, have you noticed this? And sure enough, lots of parents had noticed that their sons would come home from school and something had upset them, which a year or two ago it would have been fine, and they just were more what's called emotionally labile, so more up and down. And so our guidelines for that were to actually, a bit like you would do with children at puberty, is sit them down and say, look, sometimes your feelings are going to be up through the roof, up and down, but this is at 8, and say, look, sometimes you you know, you're going to find, like, you just feel so strong about something and you don't understand it. And I just noticed, you know, this morning you really flew off the handle with your sister, and usually you're much more easygoing with her. I just wanted you to know that at 8, this is a thing that happens. You can always talk about it, and it doesn't mean your feelings don't count. They're, you know, whatever's made you angry or made you sad still matters, but don't freak out if your feelings are so strong all of a sudden, because that's how hormones are, and just about everyone experiences this in their lives, but little kids sort of maybe wouldn't realize what was kind of making them feel that way.
And we're speaking today with Steve Bidoff, well, much loved psychologist, and about his new book called Raising Boys in the 21st Century. You've mentioned, Steve, the testosterone at 4 and at 8, and then there's the traditional one when you're coming into puberty, which I guess is between about the ages of 10 and 13. And
Yes. Now, this is a very big gender difference, Bill, because girls start puberty at least 1 year, often 2 years ahead of boys, and they shoot up in height, and they look all of a sudden look very mature and grown up. And us boys back in school, it was kind of strange because we were just nerdy little characters just getting around, just being just the same, and all of a sudden the girls were turning into goddesses, and it was disconcerting. But in boys, the first effects are, let's say if it's often around 13, it can be younger, but the first effects of puberty are that their brains go out the window. There's a lot of what's called neural pruning that happens. And so you can have a boy who at 10 or 11 is very sensible, very organized, you know, gets his own lunch, looks after his money at school, and remembers to take his homework. And then at 13, they become really, really hopeless. And what's happening is that the cortex of their brain is restarting to prune itself to become an adult brain. And so it's important to be a bit more tolerant of them and help them with lists on the refrigerator. And, you know, we joke about make sure you've got a shoe on both feet, you know, things like that. And then at 14, the levels of testosterone have picked up completely, and they've gone to about 800%, which is an enormous, it's the most you'll ever have in your lifetime.
I think in your talks, that's when people sort of...
they panic. That's right. There's a sort of a Mexican wave of panic sweeps across the auditorium, because that's so much. And what we find in families, and I'd be interested if you've noticed this, or people listening have noticed this, is 14-year-old boys are really hard to live with. They're argumentative and surly, and often dads get a bit kind of like aggro towards their sons, because we feel, oh, we're running out of time, they're not in very good shape yet, there's so many things about them that I need to fix. And so dads and sons, if they're going to have trouble, it's 14 that it'll happen. And what the old societies did, and I still think this is a really good idea, is they brought in other adults to help raise that boy. And so just uncles or granddads, or if, for instance, if you go away on a camping trip with your son at this age, go with a few dads and a few sons, so it's not that pressure cooker situation. And so that your son starts to relate to other dads or other men that are more kind of easygoing about things and more have faith in him more. And so that he can begin to look at the kind of man he wants to be without dad having to always be the one trying to guide him. And it's a shame we haven't got a talkback program, because I'd love to hear what listeners think of that or whether they've done that. But lots of people find that if they bring in other men, and also mums raising sons on their own, if they bring in other men to kind of have a chat to him about things and be in his life, then that boy finds it easier to step into manhood.
Yes, you've listed three stages, the 0 to 6, 6 to 4, 14, and then 14 to 18, and you believe that we're failing the boys in that 6 to 14, and I guess that's where they really need their dads the most. Is that where we are falling down?
We're seeing a huge improvement, and the people who listen to your program are an example of this, Bill, because when I first wrote Raising Boys, I was writing it in the mid-90s, the studies of fathering and what they call father time studies, which is they're actually professors in the world, that's what they study, is time spent by dads and kids. And the studies were coming up with a figure around about, a worldwide picture of about 8 minutes a day that dads in developed countries were spending interacting with their children, not just watching TV, but chatting, playing a game, playing a board game or kicking a ball. 8 minutes a day was the usual thing. And I'm sure you'd agree that that's not much time. time. And the really good news is as those studies continued into the 21st century, so that means a new generation of, so like my son's generation and the young men listening who are in their 20s and 30s and early 40s, those dads have trebled the amount of time they spend with their children. And that's a worldwide average figure for developed countries. If you think about it, that's massive. Doesn't that impress you, Bill, that that's changed so much?
We do observe fathers in parks with children, and I've just been looking the last few days, actually, around Father's Day. There seem to be a lot of dads out with children, and it warms your heart. So the actual stats confirm those observations.
Yes, and I think we've made it not only acceptable, but people really like to see dads with children. Women really love to see dads doing that. And whereas my dad once pushed a pram when I was just a newborn baby, he pushed me down the high street in Yorkshire in England, and people laughed at him, and kids were jeering at him for pushing a pram, and he found it quite upsetting because he just thought it'd be a nice thing to do. And that was in the 1950s. And so we've really changed. And fathers being at the birth, there are lots of dads. The father of the New Zealand Prime Minister is a stay-at-home dad. And she's gone back to work after 6 weeks. And that's working out just great. And so there's a continuum of that. And I think we're fixing that. We're having a fatherhood revolution. The only obstacles are the workplace, which is too rigid, and just financial stress, really, that, you know, we can't always, you know, be away from our work when we would like to.
Steve, you in your talks, you sometimes bring a few tears out for the men of a certain age, thinking about their relationship with their fathers. With these changes, do you think men these days are closer to their fathers?
Oh, yes. I think that, first of all, you're exactly right. The Raising Boys talk, during that talk, we talk about the dads of the past and how often people barely spoke to him. And this happened last week, both men and women. When we talk about the dads of the past, I look out at a sea of faces of about 500 people in the room, and I'm the only one who can see the faces of the audience. They're all looking towards me, and I always have the lights up in the room because I like to really see people and talk to them. And always there are people start to cry when I talk about the dads of the past. And in the early days, sometimes men would get up and they would leave the room. And the ushers and the people at the back of the hall would say, look, the man left and he was weeping. He was sobbing. And I thought, look, that mustn't have that happen. And so we put a lot more jokes and humor into the talk. And so it's good in the sense that we're touching hearts, that people are realizing how awful it was. The dads was often so estranged and so awkward in their roles in the past. It's good to feel the loss of that, but only so that it's a spur that we say, look, let's have it different with our children. And some of the best dads that I know, and the best mums, had terrible dads, and they just decided, I'm going to do it different. I'm not going to shout. I'm never going to hit my children. And I think even just those two things, you know, and then be friendly and playful. But shouting is a really, really terrible thing that is very common in the old-style families, and kids are terrified if a dad or a mum is out of control because they're only little and they could be killed. And so we've got to always, I'm 6'4" and I've got a loud voice, according to my wife and daughter. I've got a really loud voice. And so we have to re-educate ourselves to not be scary. We don't want our kids to grow up fearing us. We'd like them to respect us, but that's a very different thing.
And we're speaking today with Steve Bidolf, the author of Raising Boys in the 21st Century, and I can assure you there are loads of tips and there's a lot of good advice in this book. You quote the figures of when a big worry for parents is when their children learn to drive, and you suggest that they should not be allowed to have another male in the back seat, which seems to affect the life expectancy, which is a bit unexpected. It's there.
Yes. Can I explain that a little bit, Bill?
Sure.
These were a number of studies that were done about 10 years ago where they discovered that basically a teenage boy gets his license and he goes off to drive in the car. He's actually pretty safe on his own because he may not be as experienced as a driver, but he's so into being a driver and he's so focused on it that it sort of makes up a bit for that. Now, if he picks up his girlfriend in that car and is going with his girlfriend, he's even safer. The chances of being in an accident fall by about 30% because he's looking after his girlfriend, which is really nice. Now, however, if you put a male friend in the car, then the risk of an accident, risk of a fatality, goes up by about 40%. Now, if you put a couple of other mates in the back of the car, it goes up by 300%. And so we when they're driving with friends. They're distractible. They tend to show off. It brings out the worst in them. Now, this was such convincing research that in a number of states around the country, and I've been was a consultant with this, they've brought in laws that in the first year you're not allowed to drive with a passenger or with backseat passengers. And they brought in curfews so that the P plate drivers in the first year could only drive with a licensed driver or on their own, because that was such good evidence that that would save lives. And I was working with a friend of mine who his son was killed near Coffs Harbour in a four-car accident with four of his mates, and none of them were older than 18. And he was absolutely resolved that he wanted to change the law so that this didn't happen to other people's sons. So even if if your son's got his license and he's 17 or 18, take him to the party and pick him up. Just because he can drive, it doesn't mean it's always a great idea.
Oh, this is all wonderful information. If I could summarise your book, Steve, I'd say that at a time when we do need our boys to grow up to be heroes, dads do matter. And thank you for all the work you've done over the years. But we've reached the stage of the show where we ask our guests to pick a song. Would you like to tell us which song you've picked?
Oh, yes, Bill. There's a song, I'm so grateful that you can play it. It's called Brothers in Arms and by Dire Straits. And it's just a wonderful song about friendship and looking out for each other. And I loved it. It was featured in the TV show The West Wing, and it was one of the most moving pieces of television I've ever seen, using the combination of that song and the story. And so, yes, I'd like to play this at my funeral if I possibly can. So thank you for playing it while I'm still alive.
Mist-covered mountains are home now for me, but my home is the lowlands, and always will be. Someday through these fields of destruction, baptisms of fire, I've witnessed your suffering as the battle raged high. son's gone to hell.
And that was one of the greatest songs by Dire Straits, Brothers in Arms, chosen for us today by our special guest, Steve Bidoff. So it just remains for me now to give a thank you. Steve, thank you very much for being on Dad's on the Air.
Oh, thank you for allowing me to really talk things through, Bill. That was wonderful.
Okay, it's been great. And don't forget, we'd love to hear from any of our listeners. You can go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, send us an email and we'll be in touch. If you'd like to listen to this show again or any of our shows, go to our website, dadsontheair.com.au, or you can follow us on Facebook or Twitter. And we'll be back next week with another show on Dad's on the Air.